Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We return to the Ebola crisis now. For U.S. aid worker Dr. Kent Brantley, it was a clean bill of health yesterday.
Today is a miraculous day. I'm thrilled to be alive, to be well, and to be reunited with my family.
Brantley was released from Emory Hospital in Atlanta after being evacuated from Liberia after he became infected with Ebola. Nancy Wrightbull, a medical worker also infected, was also released yesterday and declared disease-free. But miraculous days are in short supply back in Liberia, where 576 people are estimated to have been killed by the virus. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has ordered areas of the capital Monrovia quarantined, with the army enforcing confinement in some neighborhoods and curfews. It's a challenge for the government, and joining me now is Lewis Brown, Minister of Information for Liberia. Welcome to the program, Minister Brown.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Would you say your country is in crisis right now?
Oh, we have been for a while. This virus is occurring in densely populated areas like Monrovia, where at least one-third of the population currently reside, makes it unprecedented and certainly presents a second level of difficulty.
But there's a concern that, particularly based on the history of repression in Liberia under previous regimes, that the army doesn't have a lot of credibility and moves into a neighborhood and really people fight back.
Yes. We're quite aware of that, and in some instances, that is why we have used the military as sparingly as we possibly can. And our preference really is for improved community engagement and ownership. Notwithstanding the fact that we now have a rebuilt military that has undergone proper training, guns tend to remind people of the years of wars, something we're hoping our people can move away from. But we have had to make difficult balancing act in ensuring that healthcare workers have the safe corridor they need to provide care to those who need it the most.
Can you put yourself in the mind of a family that's behind an army blockade and feels trapped?
It is difficult. That is why we are moving now with food, with water, and the resources that the government can muster to be able to get it in there. This is why we continue to emphasize it is not just a health hazard. It is not just an economic debilitating instrument, but it is also an attack on our way of life.
Would you say women are most at threat in Liberia from Ebola?
Absolutely. The statistics confirm that women are most affected because the nature of our family, the way it is structured, women are the caregiver and care providers. And that's part of the difficulty, because how do you say to a mother that you cannot care for your young one, for your own child, when your child is showing signs similar to common treatable ailments such as malaria, diarrhea, which is prevalent at this time of the year? So I understand it. I am doing the best I can. But if I can borrow from Dr. King, no one is healthy in an environment where everyone is sick.
Would you say that ignorance about modern science and the notion that this is a virus is hampering your ability to combat the disease, in that people are responding out of fear and a belief that there's some other cause of Ebola?
Yes, we can say that. But then when we do, we must put it into proper perspective. In our neck of the wood, it is commonplace for us to care for each other. In fact, we consider it a blessing from the divine to be able to return care to those who give you care when you could not for yourself. So now we're asking people to sort of walk away from these long-held cultural practices and belief. It is a source of doubt. And as people see their loved one die and their loved one infecting them as they were doing what they've always been known and they have been expected to do, it has now given people a sense of fear.
Lewis Brown is Minister of Information for Liberia. Thank you very much, sir, and good luck.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your interest and thank you for your concerns.
He spoke to us from Monrovia, Liberia. As we've noted, of the people infected with Ebola in West Africa, three quarters are women. largely because, as the Minister of Information in Liberia said, the patriarchal structure of West African society puts women in the most direct path as carriers, makes them most vulnerable to infection. Women are overwhelmingly the caregivers, food preparers, nurses, and housekeepers responsible for cleaning and water collection. To explore this more, we turn to Gina Moore, global women's rights reporter for BuzzFeed. She just returned from Liberia a few days ago. Gina Moore, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks. Hi.
So how does the structure of society in places like Liberia really put women right on the front lines?
You know, it's actually not all that different when you get down to it from the structure of society at home back in the States. Women are on the front lines of caregiving, and I think many of us have seen that in our own houses too. It's formal and it's informal. They're most of the nursing staff in the hospitals and the clinics. They're the people who inside the home are cleaning everything, taking care, making sure sick people get their medicine or whatever the treatment may be. The case with Ebola, though, is that there's no cure, there's no vaccine, there's no real treatment except keeping someone as hydrated as possible and waiting to see. And in the meantime, as people get sick, they need to be cared for, they need to be cleaned, they need to be attended to, and all that tends to fall on the shoulders of women.
And because the transmission agent of Ebola is bodily fluids or direct contact with the bodies of infected individuals, that's the means by which Ebola is transmitted from patients to women, nurses, and caregivers.
Yeah, that's right. It's actually fairly difficult to catch Ebola if you're not in a caregiving situation or you're not one of the family members who's attending to the burial rites, because it does require direct contact. It passes through bodily fluids. And those who are caring for people or those who in the past have been burying people as one traditionally might in a normal funeral ceremony have been highest at risk. The disease also gets more and more contagious as it progresses. So as someone is sick, as someone approaches death, the risk to the caregivers gets higher.
How does this disrupt the structure of society in Liberia? Does it mean women are absent from the homes if they're if they're fatalities, and that puts families and other dependents at risk?
Well, if you imagine the inside of a house, and imagine a family in Liberia as bigger than your average American family. Family in Liberia includes not just the immediate family, father, mother, kids, but also cousins, maybe a grandmother, maybe some aunties. And if one person in that house gets sick, everyone in that house is at risk, because by the time a person is symptomatic, he or she is very contagious. And it's likely going to be all of the women in that house, the wife, the sisters, the aunties, the daughters, who are taking care of the sick person. And they, if they're doing this without protective equipment, which most of them are in Liberian homes, they're at risk for getting sick as well. So you can begin to imagine the ripple effect that this will have just in a family, in one house, to say nothing of house to house to house to house in a small community. But there's also something else I think is really important in terms of how this disrupts society. The only way to protect yourself from getting Ebola when you're encountering a sick patient is not to touch them. And in Liberia, just like at home, the language of love and compassion for the people who are sick is human touch. And it's really, really difficult to look at someone you love and not be able to touch them in a time of need. And that's a real spiritual disruption.
And it's something universal that I think everyone can imagine. Is education and the distribution of countermeasures, you know, sterilization equipment, protection for hands and masks and the like a solution here?
Certainly. There is protective equipment that can be distributed to healthcare workers, and we need a lot more of that to move a lot more quickly. Latex gloves are a huge need in Liberia right now for doctors and nurses who are on the front lines of care. But no one is planning to issue latex gloves to all of the mothers of Liberia. And so there will always be some private risk inside the home until the disease is under control and eventually dies down. But all the indications are that that's going to take quite a long time.
If women are the caregivers and also the predominant majority of those infected, who's caring for the women?
It's a good question. It's other women, I think, although you can also find really, really tragic stories where the answer is no one. I met a 61-year-old man in West Point, which is an informal neighborhood in Liberia that was in the news last week because the community had been uncomfortable with the clinic there and had attacked it, closed this Ebola holding center, and now the community is under quarantine to control the spread of the disease. It's densely packed so the disease can move quickly. The 61-year-old man I met there before the quarantine was put into place told me that his brother had died of Ebola and that he had passed it to his wife. They had three children, but the children were saved because they are living with another relative somewhere else in the country. And I asked him how the wife had gotten Ebola. And he said, well, she took care of my brother. And then I asked him who took care of her. And he said, no one. Everyone was too afraid.
Finally, Gina, NGOs suspect that it will take 6 months or more to get Ebola under control in these areas. Do you see a permanent disruption to the structure of society in the places you visited?
Certainly, that's a sort of terrifying window to a lot of the people who are working on the response. That's a really long time, and there's so much need right now for equipment and help. But it's important to remember that even though this is a fairly contagious disease, it's also very rare. There are 4 million people living in Liberia, and there are about 1,200 cases that have been reported as of the newest numbers from the World Health Organization. So it's certainly risky. It can spread very quickly. But right now, we're still thankfully talking about a small portion of the population. I think the bigger effects are going to be from the fear and suspicion and distrust this creates between neighbors and friends, and that sort of spiritual rift we were talking about when you can't care for the loved ones who are dying.
Gina Moore is global human rights reporter for BuzzFeed. She just returned from Liberia, spoke with us from London. Thanks so much, Gina.
Thank you.